this week's parasha is Parashas Mishmatim. We actually started on Tuesday discussing some of the points that the Rebbe brings up in the Sicha, famous Sicha, where the Rebbe talks about the events that took place in the year Tavshin Beis on Erev Shabbos, before Shabbos, and on that day, the leaders of the nations of the world, especially the leaders of the two superpowers, the President of the United States and the Premier of Russia, met in the United Nations and wanted to discuss arms reduction, and not only arms reduction, but that how to divert and use those same resources that previously were being used to build weapons of mass destruction, to use them to improve the economy and to improve people's financial and to improve people's well-being. So the Rebbe explained that this event that was taking place is the beginning of the fulfillment of the prophecy, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, v'chitzuch avisim l'hitim, that the idea of beating swords into plowshares, taking resources that were previously used to create weapons of war, and instead to turn them into, the Rebbe says that eat them are things which are used to plowshares are things that are used to plow the earth in order that it should produce food. So beating swords into plowshares, the Rebbe says, is taking those same resources that would be used otherwise for weapons of mass destruction and using them for economic development and to encourage mutual cooperation between countries that were previously at war, at odds with each other. The Rebbe says that is the beginning of the fulfillment of this prophecy. The Rebbe also went on to say that the very fact that it was taking place in New York City, that the President of the United States left the capital of the United States and traveled to New York City, where the United Nations is. So the Rebbe explains the significance of the place is that New York City is the capital city of the Nasi Hador, of the leader of the generation. And as our sages tell us, that who are the true kings? Man Malchei, who are the true kings? Rabbonon, these are the Torah scholars, especially the leader of the generation. So the Rebbe explains that the significance of the fact that this took place in New York City is because this is the capital city of the leader of the generation, the place to where he came in order to bring Torah into the lower hemisphere. As it's explained in Chassidus, that the revelation of Torah did not fully reach this part of the world. And by bringing Torah down to America, and not only bringing the Torah here, but actually establishing New York as the headquarters for which all of the work of spreading Torah and Yiddishkeit and Hasidus around the world originates from here, that is the significance of this event taking place in New York City. The Rebbe also points out, in general, the very fact that the United Nations, being a place which is dedicated towards trying to bring peace and harmony between nations, so much so that, as the Rebbe points out, that on the wall of the building is written this pasuk, this verse, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares. The Rebbe explains that the very fact that the United Nations exists and is based in New York City is because this is the capital city of the leader of the generation. And the very fact that the nations of the world are coming to realize and recognize the importance of peace, that it's time to stop the hostilities and to stop warfare and to start working on peace and to operate in ways of tzedek v'yosha, of justice and righteousness. And he says this is a direct result of the work of the Nasi Adar, of the Mashiach of the generation, as it ever brings from the commentary of the Radak, and the Radak explains that this prophecy of the Chitzuch Avosim L'Itim, they shall beat their swords into plowshares, is connected to the prophecy which brought in the same chapter that the nations will come to Mashiach. They will come up to the Beis HaMikdash, they will come to Mashiach, so that he should teach them the ways of Hashem, how to serve Hashem, and that he should judge between nations, and he should right all wrongs that exist in the world. So that says the reason why they will beat their swords into plowshares is because of the fact that Mashiach will reconcile, will judge between the nations, and he will reconcile all differences. Therefore, they will have no need for implements of war, and therefore they shall beat their swords into plowshares. So the Rebbe explains that we see that this prophecy is directly connected to the work of Mashiach in the world. So the Rebbe explains that the beginning of the fulfillment of this prophecy can be seen, the link between the work of Mashiach, the work of the leader of the generation, and the fulfillment of this prophecy by virtue of the fact that it took place in New York City, which is the capital city of the leader of the generation, of the Mashiach of the generation. And it also makes the connection to Parshas Mishpatim and explains that Mishpatim are laws that Torah explains, these are laws that we would figure out ourselves even if the Torah did not tell us. These are rational laws. They make sense. You shouldn't steal. You shouldn't cheat. You should deal fairly with each other. So these types of laws are laws which the human intellect could possibly conceive of on its own without being commanded by Hashem. And yet, still in all, we see that even though human beings logically could understand this, still in all, for thousands of years, we find that human beings did not behave in the proper manner, even though it makes sense not to kill, it makes sense not to steal, it makes sense for countries not to be at war with each other and to destroy each other and to bring terrible bloodshed and suffering into the world. Even though it all makes a lot of sense, but the fact is we see that despite how rational and logical it is, the Goyim did not behave themselves that way. They did not follow these laws. So the Rebbe explains, so what changed? The Rebbe explains that because these laws were given by Hashem, because these laws are a divine mandate, so therefore what happened is that over time, because of the work of spreading Yiddishkeit and spreading Sheva Mitzvahs amongst the Goyim, because of this work of bringing the light of Torah into the world, that's why the Goyim themselves have come to the realization that it doesn't make sense to continue this never-ending cycle of escalating warfare and escalating arms buildup. They've come to the conclusion on their own, rationally, that it's time to stop building up weapons of mass destruction and time to start using those resources to help people, and that the countries should work together in mutual cooperation for the mutual benefit of all mankind. And that explains that the very fact that this is happening in a way that they figured this out on their own, it's not, in other words, when you look at the Radak that explains it, just that they will stop fighting with each other and they will stop building weapons is because Mashiach will judge between the nations. So you imagine, what does it mean? It means that Mashiach will be the leader of the world, and he'll tell everybody what to do and they'll listen to him. And that explains that that's not the ultimate fulfillment of this prophecy. The ultimate fulfillment of the prophecy is when they figure it out on their own. If they're just told what to do, if they're just forced to behave in a certain way by Mashiach, it doesn't mean they didn't really change. They're still the same way. It's just that now Mashiach is in charge, and they have no choice. They have to stop fighting. And he says, that's not the ultimate. The ultimate is that Mashiach's effect on the world is such that on their own, they realize that it's time to start beating swords at the blush. So the questions that we raised on Tuesday, first of all, when you look at the record of the UN, it never talks about how wonderful the United Nations is, and the fact that it was created in order to bring peace amongst nations. That's why it's situated in New York City, which is the capital of the leader of the generation. The question is, if you look at the record of the UN, especially as it relates to Eretz Yisrael, except for the original vote in the UN, which voted for partitioning what was then called Palestine into two parts, into a Jewish part and an Arab part, ever since then, the UN has been working against the Yidden and Eretz Yisrael nonstop. There are many examples of this. In fact, they say that the overwhelming majority of the resolutions passed in the UN were against Eretz Yisrael. So, what's so great about the UN? How much peace has it really brought into the world? Especially as it relates to Jews and Eretz Yisrael. The other question that we raised is that even as that if you look at what's going on in the world today Russia is threatening to stop the Cold War all over again. Just this week, after President Bush attacked Iraq, they're threatening again to start the Cold War all over again. So a lot of these things that the Rebbe describes as unbelievable prophecies, if you look at the world around us today, they don't seem to be, it doesn't seem to be as wonderful as it sounds when you just read the Sikha. I'm not getting into why he did or didn't. I don't know. I never spoke to him. But the fact is that the planes went, and the Russians' reaction was extremely negative. And they were making very threatening noises, and they said that this week they're going to test a new intercontinental ballistic missile, a new long-range missile. Since that time, China has already gotten nuclear capabilities to reach the United States and threatens to do so at some yet-to-be-determined date in the future. So things don't look that great when we talk in terms of beating swords at the clash. The other question is, what is this great advantage? Why does the Rebbe emphasize so much the idea that the Goyim themselves, the Rebbe says there's a mile in the fact that the Goyim themselves came to this conclusion on their own. Why is that better than if actually Mashiach came and told the Goyim to stop fighting? That's what you would think. At least on a superficial level, you would think that the ultimate is to have the full revelation of Mashiach, and Mashiach makes sure all the guys stop fighting and stop using their weapons for negative things and start using them for positive things. What's so great about the fact that the guys themselves, the Rebbe says, figured this out on their own? So, in order to explain this, we started talking about something which the Rebbe alludes to but doesn't go into in this sikhla, but the Maimarim on Parshas Mishpatim, so from the Alter Rebbe, the Bittler Rebbe, Tzemach Tzedek, the later Rabbeim also, one of the topics that's discussed in Parshas Mishpatim is the role of Moshe Rabbeinu and his relationship with the Jewish people. And the question that Chassidus addresses is that it says, Ve'ela Mishpatim Ashitasim Lefneim, these are the laws that you should place before them. And then it continues, and it says, Ki sikna eved ivri, that you will purchase a Jewish slave. So the question that is raised is that grammatically, it would seem to be, this verse would not seem to make sense. The verse seems to be addressed to Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem is talking to Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem is the first person. Grammatically, Moshe Rabbeinu is the second person grammatically, and the Jewish people are being referred to in the third person. Hashem says, these are the laws that you should place in front of them. So Hashem is talking to Moshe, he's talking about the Jewish people, he refers to the Jewish people as them. Then it says, Ki sikna when you shall buy. It should say, if Hashem is referring to the Jewish people in the third person, it should say, you should tell them when they buy. Why does it say when you shall purchase a Jewish slave? It should say, Ki yiknu, when they will purchase a Jewish slave. So So Chassidus, so it's explained in Chassidus that actually in this verse is alluded to the real job of Moshe Rabbeinu. But the real job of Moshe Rabbeinu is that Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu that the Eila Mishpatim Ashatasim Lufneya, that Mishpatim, Chassidus explains, Mishpatim refers to the knowledge of God. As Mishpatim, as the word Mishpat is translated in the Targum, it says in Sefer Bereishis, Kamishpat Harisha, translate Kehilchasa Kadmais, that he translates Mishpat as Hilchasa. So Halacha, or in the Hebrew we use the word Halacha. The word Halacha means to go. To go. Halicha, Halacha means going. So what does it mean? Ve'elam Mishpatim Ashatasim Lufneihem. So Chassidus explains that that Moshe Rabbeinu's role amongst all, there are the leaders of the Jewish people that we refer to as the seven shepherds of the Jewish people, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David, and each one contributes a different spiritual strength to the Jewish people. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu's role is to communicate das of godliness to the Jewish people, which we'll soon explain what that is. So the way Chassidus explains the verse is Eila Mishpatim, these are the ways to know God, Asher Tasim Lufneihem, that you should place, Lufneihem can also mean within them, Lepnimi Yusam. These are the ways of knowing God, that you should place within them. And how do you do that? Kisikna, when you will purchase. So we'll soon explain what does it mean, that the way Moshe does this is kisikna. So, what is Das in Elikus? Das in Elikus, Chassidus explains, that what is the role and function of Das? Okay, everybody's familiar with the fact that Chabad stands for Chacham Bina Das, and can more or less explain what the three things are, but many people don't have a real proper understanding of what Das is. And it's important to know, because as the Alter Rebbe explains in the beginning of Tanya, that you could have Chochma and Bina, but without Das, you will not produce real emotions of love and fear of Hashem. You'll only produce Dimyanis Shav, false illusions, false imaginary emotions, not true emotions. So without Das, you don't really have anything. So what is Das in Elikus? So it's brought into Maimarim that there's two types of souls. As it says in the Navi of Yirmiyah, that the Zarati is based in Israel, I shall seed the Jewish people, Zera Adam, Zera Behemah. Literally it's referring to the fact that Hashem will bless, that the Jewish people will have a lot of children and their cattle will have a lot of offspring. But according to the Hasidic interpretation, it says that within the Jewish people, I will plant two types of seeds. One type of seed are people that there are two types of souls. One type of soul is called the seed of man, and one type of soul is called the seed of animal. What is the difference between these two types of souls? It can be understood by the difference between what is the difference between a human being and an animal. The primary difference between a human being and an animal is that a human being has das, which an animal does not really have. What does it mean, das? Especially, what does it mean, das in Elikus? So these souls that have das, it's explained in the Siddhas, that generally the way we know things, the way we experience things, is through our five senses. The way we experience things is through our five senses, through sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. Through the five senses is how we know and experience things in our world. Then there are things which we understand intellectually. We didn't necessarily experience them, but we understand them conceptually, we understand them intellectually. The difference between things that we experience and things that we understand is that things that we experience are very real to us. And we know them in a way of first-hand knowledge, which could be compared to seeing. When you see something, you know it for a fact, and nobody could convince you otherwise, because you saw it with your own eyes. However, there are things that we know, but we don't know them firsthand. It's not firsthand knowledge. We don't know them through experience. We heard about them. We figured out something to be true. So what we know intellectually could be compared to something that we heard about. Something that someone told us about. We don't have first-hand experience of it, but logically it makes sense that such and such a thing exists, or that such and such a thing is true. So the intellect, there's a disadvantage that the intellect has over the senses, that the senses are things that we have first-hand knowledge and experience of, whereas the intellect, whatever we grasp and understand, is kind of, we understand things that are outside of ourselves, but we haven't experienced directly. The faculty of Das is what makes it possible for something that we know through our intellect to become as real to us as something that we know through our senses. The faculty of Das makes it possible that something that you know and understand intellectually, you should feel it and sense it and experience it as so real, just as real as if you experienced it with your senses, just as real as if you saw it with your own eyes. What is an example of something of Das that every human being has, which they sense in a way that's so real that it's as if they saw it? So Chassidus gives an example of something that everybody knows and experiences as real, even though they don't experience it with their five senses, and that is the fact that there is a life force pumping energy into a person's body. Everybody feels that there's some, whatever they call it, some people may call it a soul, some people may call it something else, but whatever they call it, they never saw it, no one ever saw their soul, no one knows what it is. No one knows exactly what it is, but everyone knows that it's there. And they feel that it's there. They feel when they're tired and exhausted, they feel like the energy is leaving them. When they go to sleep, they feel like it's leaving them even more. When they wake up in the morning and they feel fresh and energized and invigorated, so they feel new energy being pumped into their body. They feel energized. They feel that whatever this force is that's pumping energy into them, they feel it. They don't see it. They don't hear it. They don't smell it. They don't taste it. They can't touch it. But yet, it's so real to a person. Obviously, it's only something that the mind understands, but yet the way the mind experiences it, it's so real to a person that it's a total experience, just as if I experienced it with my five senses, as if I could see it with my own eyes. And I don't know what it is, and I never saw it, but it's so real to me as if I could see it with my own eyes. So here's an example of Das, that the mind can actually not only understand things, but the mind can actually experience, translate what it understands into experience, into a sensation that I can feel it, even though I'm not feeling it with any of my senses. So he explains that there are certain souls that they have Das and Elokus. Das and Elokus means that we know that there is a life force pumping energy into everything that exists. Not just into me. There's a chayas, there's a life, there's an energy in everything. And we know that there's a life force that's pumping energy into everything. That life force is the source of all life. That's God. That's the Eivishter is pumping life into everything. So everybody understands that. That's something that anyone can understand logically and rationally. But those souls that have Das and Elokus don't just understand it. They feel it. As if they can actually see it with their own eyes. They feel it. It's so real to them. So when they look at the physical world around them, what do they see? What do they feel? They feel the godly energy being pumped into everything in existence and making it exist. So Chassidus explains that for people like that, that when everything in the physical world, what they see is, what they experience, what they feel, they experience in the world is the godliness in everything. So to those people, serving God is very easy. because the world is not doesn't conceal God from them. They actually feel and sense God in everything. They sense the godliness in everything, so the world is not a concealment for them. If the world is not a concealment for them, so it's very easy for them to learn Torah, to do mitzvahs, to carry out Hashem's will. Not only that, but even worldly pleasures don't mean anything to them. Because we know that one of the basic rules of human nature is, as it's brought in the Pasuk, Kol Asher Lo Ish Yitein Ba'ad Nafsho, that everything that a person owns, they would gladly give away to save their own life. To save your life, you're ready to give away anything. It's not like a sacrifice. If somebody finds out, needs an operation, and finds out that in order to have the operation, they have to sell their home and they have to give away everything, then I can say, oh, I don't know, let me see if I can afford it. Should I save my life or should I save my bank account? No one thinks like that. Because everything that a person knows, when it comes to your life, you're willing to give away everything to save your life. So a person who feels how godliness is the life of everything, and godliness is his own life, he feels God pumping energy into him. If he feels the godliness, so everything else in the world is nothing. For his own life, he's willing to give away everything, and it's not a sacrifice. He doesn't feel like it's hard, it's difficult. So there are no worldly pleasures for such a person that could distract him from God, because to him, he sees the godliness of everything. So there's nothing else. When it's a choice between your life and anything else, you're willing to give up everything else, and it's not a sacrifice. We said those souls that are compared to animals, don't have das and elikus, meaning they have five senses like everybody else. With the five senses, you can only experience things in the physical world. They have a mind, they have an intellect, they can understand spiritual concepts, they can learn about the greatness of God, they can learn about how nothing else really exists except God, and how everything compared to God is nothing, and it can even make sense to them rationally that a person should be willing to give away everything for the sake of God. It all makes a lot of sense, but they don't experience reality though. The way they experience reality is there's a world, and there's God, and God is a separate thing from the world. They don't experience the godliness in everything. They understand it rationally, logically, but they don't experience it. They don't feel it. It's not real to them. It's like a foreign concept. Makes sense, but it's still only intellectual. It's not experiential. They're missing the element of God. So this explains to Elam Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lufneim that Moshe Rabbeinu's job is to give those souls who in and of themselves do not have the capacity. And by the way, for those souls, serving God is extremely difficult, because the world is a place of concealment, and the world does conceal God, and the world, there are a lot of pleasures out there that look very attractive, and it seems very difficult to sacrifice those things for God, because to them they don't see. The world doesn't look at them like nothing and God is everything. It's not how they experience reality. It might make sense to them, but that's not what feels like them. So Moshe Rabbeinu's job is to communicate das to these people, to make it possible for them to actually experience das in elikus. And that's why it says in the beginning of Parshas Va'era, at the end of Parshas Shmos, what does it say? That Moshe Rabbeinu came to the people and he told them that Hashem sent him. It says, "Vayamein ha'am," that the people believed. Faith is also something. Not only is the intellect something that's not a direct experience. Faith is certainly believing in something is certainly even more removed from a person's direct experience than something which you figured out intellectually. Faith means I accept it. It's the truth, but I never experienced it. So at the end of Parshas Shmos, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes and tells the Jewish people that we're going out of Mitzrayim and we're going to go to Mount Torah and Eretz Yisrael, it says that the people believed. When at the beginning of Parshas Va'era, Hashem says, now you should go tell the Jewish people, V'yedatem ki ani Hashem. You will know that I am Hashem. Before, all the Jewish people had was faith. Now Hashem sent Moshe Rabbeinu with a new mission. to communicate to the Jewish people the Yedaita, that you should have Das, that Hashem has now empowered Moshe Rabbeinu to give over to the Jewish people Das in Elikus, meaning that you will not only have faith, you will not only believe, but now you will actually experience godliness as the reality when you come to Mount Zion. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu's generation is called the Dor Deah, the generation of Deah, because it is he is the one that communicated to that generation Das in Elikus. Oh, in the following generations. So Chassidus explains, with this Chassidus explains what it means that Moshe Hu Goyel Rishon Hu Goyel Achron. That Moshe Rabbeinu was the first Redeemer, and Moshe Rabbeinu was the final Redeemer. That in every generation there's a Moshe Rabbeinu. Every generation there's a leader of that generation. His main function is to give, to communicate this capacity, not only to give over information and facts and explanations, to actually give over the capacity that these souls in and of themselves do not have, to give them the capacity to experience godliness, to know godliness in such a way that you actually experience godliness as reality. And that's why it's said that Moshe Rabbeinu is the final Redeemer, because it is this power to communicate Das in Elikus which is the hallmark of the ultimate redemption. Because what does it say about the ultimate redemption? It says, Umala Aretz Deya Es Hashem, the world will be filled with the knowledge of God. It says also, that one person will not have to teach another person, because all of them will know me. So again, the word that is used is Das, that what we will experience in the time of redemption is Das in Elikus. That we will actually experience God as real. The question is, so before we get to that, there's another question. Yeah, and these Maimonides, it's explaining that the main thing that will be in the time of redemption is the knowledge of God. The question is that in other places it's brought that the main thing will be that we will see godliness. Because it says, V'ro kol baso yachto, that all flesh will see godliness. There's ayin v'ayin yiru, that eye to eye we will see godliness. If you could see it, what do you need Das for? We just got through explaining that the reason why you need the Das is because when you're dealing with things that you can't experience with your five senses, something that you can't see, we gave an example of the soul, you can't see the soul, you don't know what it is, how do you relate to the soul? Through the power of Das. And the same thing with God, with the Eivishter. You can't see the Eivishter, nobody knows what the Eivishter is. The only thing you could do is, you could have Das in Elikus. You could experience how the Eivishter is bringing the world to life. And the question is, how do we say that the ultimate point of the redemption is? That there will be Das in Elikus, when we find many places that it says that the main point will be that you'll actually see it with physical eyes, that the flesh itself will see. It doesn't talk about just a spiritual seeing. It says, Ro kol basar, that the flesh itself will see. So the question is, if I can see, what do I need Das for? I only need Das in order to know those things that I can't see. So the way this is explained in Chassidus is that there's a difference between what I see and what I know. And therefore I need to have both, because each one has an advantage over the other. When I see something, it's a fact. Nothing and nobody can convince me otherwise. Why? And they'll give me all the reasons in the world, all the arguments in the world why I'm wrong, and I don't have an answer. I may not have a good answer to all the reasons they're giving. All I can say is, but I saw it. Your arguments sound great. They make so much sense. And you're right. But I saw it. So seeing, in a sense, even though it's an experience, but seeing is still similar to faith. In other words, I don't know what it is. I don't know why it is. I just know that I saw it. Das, I come to Das after I fully understand something. I can only have Das in something that I fully understand. I don't fully understand it, I can't relate to it as real on an intellectual level. My mind can only relate to something as being totally real if I first understand it. That's why first I need Chachma Bina, and then I can have Das. I can't just go straight to Das without having the Chachma Bina first, without understanding what it is that I'm trying to relate to. So the advantage of seeing is that it's totally real. It's totally real. What, I don't know what it is, I don't know why it is, I just know it's a fact. It's because I saw it, and I see it. Das means, in a way, something that I have through Das is more deeply a part of me because I actually understand. I don't necessarily understand what it is, but I understand that that is the way it is. So Das is a product of me. It comes from my knowledge and understanding. Therefore, it's much more deeply a part of me. So seeing, I'm still seeing something outside of me. And I just have the power to see it in such a way that it becomes so real to me. Das means what I know is a part of me. It's my feeling. It's my sensation. I experience it. When I'm seeing something, as powerful as seeing is, and as much as seeing is a permanent, solid truth, but the fact is, there's information coming from outside of me and communicating itself to me through my eyes. Yeah, Das means this is me. I know it. I experience it. I sense it as reality. That's my reality. It's not just a reality that I have come to know, it has become mine. So therefore, in the time of Gula, we need both things. We need to be able to see the divine reality, but at the same time, we need to be able to understand and experience internally the divine reality. Moshe Rabbeinu actually did both things. He brought the Yidden to Kriyas Yam Suf. He brought the Yidden to Matan Torah, where the Jews saw God. But that's not enough. You could see God, and a little bit later, once you don't see anymore, you can go back to the way you were before. Because even though it's true, it didn't change you inside. You're still the same person inside. You just saw something. It's when you have the Das, it's when you have the knowledge. After the 40 years in the desert, Moshe Rabbeinu said, now you're ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. After seeing Matan Torah, after seeing Kriyas Yam Suf, they still weren't ready. Because they didn't have the Das. After 40 years, and 40 years is the time when it says that a student can get the Das of his Rebbe. When a student gets the Das of his Rebbe, he actually sees and experiences reality through his Rebbe's eyes. Until then, whatever he hears from his Rebbe is intellectual teachings. To actually get the Das of his Rebbe, to actually perceive and experience reality through his Rebbe's eyes, the way he sees reality, that's a process that takes 40 years. After 40 years, Moshe Rabbeinu said, now you're ready to go in there. So the thing is like this. So that's why we say, so even though Moshe Rabbeinu brought tremendous revelation of godliness into the world, that we don't say that that's his main role. His main role is what? Communicating Das. That's his main role. To reveal godliness in the world. The world before it was created, God was even more revealed. That's not the point. The point is that the revelation should be in such a way that it's internalized in a panemius, that it should become a part of the person. That is really the ultimate role of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the same thing is true of Mashiach. We said that Moshe is the first redeemer, Moshe is the final redeemer. That when Mashiach brings the world to a point where the world is filled with the knowledge of God, and that everyone will know God, Mashiach's main job is not to bring about big revelations. And the Rambam says that Mashiach doesn't even have to do miracles. Okay? His main job is not to bring about big revelations of godliness in the world. According to the Rambam, what's Mashiach's main job? Mashiach's main job is that the Goyim should stop fighting and the Jews should have peace. And be able to serve God. That's the main job of Mashiach. And so that the Jewish people will be free, everyone in the world will be free. that everybody will be free to pursue what? Das Hashem. That's Mashiach's main job. He doesn't have to do miracles. He doesn't have to change nature. He doesn't, in other words, that his main job is not bringing revelation. Although those things will happen also. And the Rebbe explains that I was not saying they won't happen. That I was just saying that that's not his main job. And therefore it's possible that at the beginning of the Gula, you may not see great revelation. You may just see the world and change, and nature doesn't have to change. It could be the same old world, except that the Goyim are no longer disturbing us and they're no longer fighting with each other. And they're just, everybody's getting along and we have total freedom to pursue the knowledge of God. That's what Gula is. According to the Rambam, the basic definition of Gula. After that, everything else is extra. They're also going to happen. That's not the essence of what Gula is. The essence of what Gula is that in a natural way, the world will change without nature being broken. No miracles. Doesn't have to be any miracle. The Rebbe said, we've had already miracles. We've had miracles that are connected to the redemption, the Nisim and the Floyd. But it doesn't have to be, it all could be in a way that it all seems so natural. The world itself seems to be changing in a natural way. Why? Because if it's just revelation from above, if the guys stop fighting with each other because there's a great revelation from above, but they didn't really change. It's just in front of God, how can you fight with each other? It's something outside of them is preventing them from fighting with each other, but they didn't change. The ultimate is, Mashiach's ultimate role is to bring the das and knowledge of God, means that the human intellect itself should understand and appreciate, it should be an internal process. That the Goyim come to the realization that what are we killing each other for? Why are we building up all these crazy weapons of mass destruction? What are we killing each other for? If we can be using the same things to help each other. So the Rebbe says that, more than if Mashiach would just come and force all the Goyim to throw away their weapons. The greater revelation of Mashiach in the world is dafka when it comes about through these natural means where they come to the conclusion on their own. However, the problem is that we have to realize what's happening in the world. The Goyim, the way they change is in a natural way. But Mashiach brings Das into the world and it affects the Goyim, that happens to them in a natural way. By Jews, whatever we get has to come through our voices. We have to work for it. We don't wake up in the morning and look at a different world without putting in effort. To us, things can be happening all around us. And the world could be changing in so many ways and we don't realize it. Why? Because what Moshe Rabbeinu gives us requires effort. And that's the last maimon that ever gave us about the Tzava, that ever explained there, that Moshe Rabbeinu can connect the Jewish people to God, but they still have to do the work. The Yikru Elecha, Shaman Zayazuk. He can make the connection, but the Jewish people have to do the work and take advantage of the connection. What the Jews get, that comes through Avodah. So what the Mashiach gives us is the capacity to have Das and Elikus. But if we don't utilize the capacity, if we don't work on it, we're not going to have it. He doesn't just hand it to us. That's like a revelation from above. Das means you process the information. You did the Chochmah, you did the Bina, you did the work, and now you're ready for Das. So normally, a soul that's not on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, with all the Chochmah and Bina in the world, when they work on the Das, they get very little for their effort, because they don't have the capacity to connect to God on that level. When we say that Mashiach makes it possible to know God, means that it's possible to know, but it takes work. Das doesn't happen by itself. Das is a process which takes a lot of work. So what the Rebbe is telling us is happening is like this. In the world out there, they're changing. they're coming to new understanding and realization of the same government that devoted itself and all its resources to fighting against belief in God now openly accepts a belief in God and supports and encourages it. They're changing. But the problem is that we're not. Because for us to change, it takes work. It takes effort. Or, in other words, we have to open our own arms. The Rebbe spoke, starting from Tav Shin Nun, the Rebbe said, it's 40 years since the Rebbe. So the Rebbe says, in Tav Shin Nun, the Rebbe announced, 40 years have passed, now Hashem has given you a heart to know, and eyes to see, and ears to hear. You can know. You have the, everyone now has the capacity for that. But, it's a capacity, like anything else. You know, if you look in the Rebbe's letters, the countless letters where the Rebbe writes to people, the Rebbe writes in Torah Ur, that when a person does something, their hearts and minds become refined 1,000 times over. So the Rebbe says that the heart and mind are only tools. So even if they become refined 1,000 times over, and people would complain to him, the Rebbe would encourage people to go out and do apatya and do, be involved in all kinds of good works. And people would complain about their own spiritual growth as being neglected. So the Rebbe would say, now the Rebbe says that your heart and mind are refined 1,000 times over when you do tzedakah. That means with 1,000, that means with the same effort, you can accomplish 1,000 times more. So the Rebbe says, but that requires the effort. It doesn't mean that without effort. It means that with effort, you can get 1,000 times more out of the same effort. But it doesn't mean that it's without effort. So when we say that the das, that we've reached the point where we have das, doesn't mean that we can go to sleep and wake up in the morning with das. It means we have the faculty. We have the capacity. So the difference between us and the rest of the world is that to the Goyim, the effect of Mashiach comes natural. They don't have to do our poison. To us, the same effects don't come natural. We have to do our voices to get the same, but obviously the result that we get is very different. The das in Elikus that a Yid has is very different than the das that a Goy has, that he realizes that he's supposed to behave himself, that he realizes that he's supposed to respect Judaism, that he realizes whatever it is the Goy realizes. The Jew can actually experience das in Elikus, can actually experience godliness. But on our part, it requires that. So the way the Rebbe explains it is like, so what's the Rebbe says, wonderful thing, the UN. So you look at it, you say, what? The UN is this organization that has been terrible, except for the first vote to partition what was then called Palestine. Ever since then, the UN has only been terrible for the Yidden Eretz Yisrael. And the answer is, not because they don't understand that Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Jewish people. It's because the Jewish people don't understand that Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Jewish people. The Rebbe said that if the Jewish people would stand up and say that we're not here because of the UN, we're here because God gave it to us, then the Goyim would agree. The Rebbe says they would agree. They wouldn't. It might take them a little time till they agree. You may not get up and say it belongs to us, and everyone says, yeah, it belongs to us. But if you stand strong and you communicate that you don't think you're there because the UN voted you in there, you think you're there because God gave it to you. The Rebbe says they will accept it. So the problem is not that the Goyim didn't really change because you see the way they act towards Eretz Yisrael. No, they act towards Eretz Yisrael the way we act towards Eretz Yisrael. Because we treat Eretz Yisrael like a place that was given to us by the UN. So if the UN says that we gave it to you, we can take it away. We also gave part of it to the Arabs. So we want the Arabs to have their part. That's what we gave. So when we treat it, when we don't have the das that we need to have, when we don't understand and realize what's going on in the world and how the world is changing and the open miracles that Hashem has showed us regarding Eretz Yisrael, when we don't have the das in Elikus, so then we can't turn around and tell the guy, how come you're against Israel? I hold the same thing you hold. And time after time, the Rebbe says that when they go to the American politicians and they ask them why are they pressuring Israel, the American politicians say, they asked us to. We didn't decide to create the pressure. They asked us to make the pressure. Because they want to be able to go to the voters and say, it's not our fault, it's the American government's fault. But they're the ones who ask us for the pressure. So the problem here is not with the guy. The guy is not doing just fine. The problem is here is with us, that we have to realize that opening our eyes to realize the world that we're living in. So for us to take advantage of the fact that after 40 years, and unfortunately it's no longer 40 years already, it's 50 years plus, that we can have das, that we can have daite de rabbi, the das of our Rebbe. After 40 years, the Rebbe said, you have now been given the capacity to have the das of your Rebbe. That's to experience godliness the way the Rebbe experiences it. To not just understand and comprehend and be able to give lectures and speeches and it's all very nice, but that it becomes real to you. That if you do the work of having the das, you could have it. You can actually experience and perceive reality the way the Rebbe does. So people talk about Mashiach, oh, the Rebbe sees things the way they are in the spiritual realm. The Rebbe says, I'm telling you that what I see and what I experience, you can see and experience the same thing. I have given you that kaya, which takes work. You have to open your eyes. You got to put in the effort. It's possible for you. It's accessible for you. It's easy for you relative to whatever it was in earlier generations. But it still takes some effort. And that's really the message. If you look at the, even in the Sikha of Mishpatim, the Rebbe says that what should we do? We should take on and strengthen all those things that bring the redemption. In other words, after all the explanations how it's the beginning of beating swords with the flashes, the Rebbe says, but ultimately it's our job. It's an avoda. It's work. The Rebbe never ends up the Sikha and saying, therefore, we should all sit back and wait. That's not the bottom line. That's why a lot of people, you know, they see these amazing things that the Rebbe said about the times that we're living in, and somehow the message that some people seem to take from it is that you just have to wait. That's not the message. The Mashiach's main contribution to the world is not that you sit passively and he shows you things and he reveals things. The Ian Elikus is not his main accomplishment. That you'll be able to see God. The main avodah of Mashiach is that you should know godliness and experience godliness internally. And that is something that will take work. The Rambam calls it an asik. An asik means something that you work at. The Rambam says that when Mashiach comes, everyone will be free, and that will a year asik kol ha'elam el ladas Hashem l'vav. But it's an asik. It's an effort. Of course, it says that you won't need one person to teach another person. Kulam yeduos. Everyone will know me. But even that knowledge will not come in and of itself. That knowledge has to come through an asik. It's an effort. At some point, after we do all the necessary effort, then we reach the point where the world is filled with the knowledge of God.